Our next presenter is Irene Heaton. Irene is a third-year doctoral student in the Department of Epidemiology at the University of California, Berkeley. Her research interests include understanding the role of neighborhoods in health outcomes, specifically how this relationship contributes to racial disparities in maternal and child health.
So, thank you for that introduction, and good morning. Again, my name is Irene Heaton. And today I look forward to talking to you about an analysis we did looking at racial disparities in gestational weight gain and whether this relationship is modified by pre-pregnancy weight status. So at this time I have no financial relationships to disclose. So to kind of orient you to my presentation, I'm going to begin with a brief background section describing why we'd be interested in racial disparities in gestational weight gain. Next, I'll move on to presenting our research question along with a conceptual framework. Through this conceptual framework, I'll describe how we operationalized our variables of interest and also describe our analytic approach. I'll then get into our results, and finally, I'll conclude with a brief discussion and suggestions for next steps. So, to begin, to kind of set the stage for why we would be interested in racial disparities in gestational weight gain, we have to take a step back and look at infant and maternal health outcomes. So as it's well known, there are racial disparities across a number of maternal and infant health outcomes. For example, infant mortality is twice as high in black women compared to white women. Similar trends exist for low birth weight and preterm birth outcomes. Additionally, postpartum weight retention is also higher in black women compared to white. And so, furthermore, these outcomes have also been associated with gestational weight gain. So, as you can see here, both low and high gestational weight gain are associated with a number of outcomes, including small for gestational age, preterm birth, childhood obesity, and postpartum weight retention. So, in approaching our analysis, we came from the framework of maybe understanding if racial differences in gestational weight gain could shed light on why these racial differences in these pregnancy and maternal health outcomes persist. So, from that approach, we had two questions of interest. Our first was establishing whether there are racial differences in gestational weight gain. After that, we extended our analysis to look at whether this relationship was further modified by pre-pregnancy weight status. To answer our question, we used data from the National Longitudinal Survey on Youth, and this was a cohort of individuals who were 14 to 22 in 1979 and have been followed by the Bureau of Labor Statistics up until the present. And so there's a rich amount of economic and health indicators that were collected in this cohort. We selected 2,282 mothers with 5,678 pregnancies to be our study population. Blacks and Hispanics were oversampled in this population, and so we were confident that we actually had enough sample size to really look at racial differences between black, white, and Hispanic mothers. We included singleton births occurring from 1979 to 2008, and we were really interested in focusing on these racial differences in normal weight, overweight, and obese women. So, on the next few slides, I'm going to use a conceptual framework to walk through how we operationalize our variables, just to give you a constant grounding. So first, I'm going to talk about gestational weight gain adequacy. So we operationalize gestational weight gain as an adequacy measure in order to account for the fact that as a woman progresses in gestation, she'll gain more weight. So there's a high correlation between length of gestation and amount of weight gain. So the equation that we use to calculate gestational weight gain was basically observed gestational weight gain divided by the expected gestational weight gain of the mother. We measured observed gestational weight gain from our data in the NLSY, and this was the difference between self-reported delivery weight and self-reported weight at prior to pregnancy. Now, expected gestational weight gain was a measure that was defined according to 2009 IOM recommendations, and I'll use the next few slides to step through the exact equation we use to calculate expected gain. So the expected weight gain was constructed from two elements. First, we focused on the recommended first trimester gain as the basis to constructing our expected weight gain. Now, the 2009 IOM report has recommendations based on pre-pregnancy weight status for the amount that a woman should gain during her first trimester. And as you can see here, it ranges from a little over 1 pound to about 4.4 pounds. Next, to account for the fact that basically weight gain over gestation is not constant, we used a rate of weight gain per week for the second and third trimesters. And this, again, was taken from the 2009 Institute of Medicine report and varied by pre-pregnancy weight status. So you can see here the rate of weight gain per week for the second and third trimesters range from 0.5 pounds to 1 pound, depending on pre-pregnancy weight status. Finally, to actually calculate the amount of weight that was gained in the second and third trimester, we multiplied this rate by the number of weeks of gestation. And I'm sorry about the spacing of the slides. But essentially, the remaining weeks of gestation were the total length of gestation minus the 13 weeks that were included in the first trimester. And so from this equation, we calculated the amount of expected weight gain, which served as the denominator of our weight gain adequacy measure. And this resulted in a percentage of the expected gain that a woman gained from the data that we observed. From this weight gain adequacy measure, we derived indicators for inadequate and excessive gestational weight gain. And here you can see the thresholds that we use for inadequate and excessive weight gain. Again, these vary by pre-pregnancy status. So women gaining below the inadequate thresholds were classified as inadequate weight gainers, and women gaining above the excessive weight gain thresholds were classified as excessive gainers. And so that's how we constructed our gestational weight gain adequacy measure. Here you can see how we constructed our additional main variables of interest, which was race, which is where we were trying to look at differences. Again, we classified as Hispanic, non-Hispanic black, and non-Hispanic white, other. And we also classified pre-pregnancy BMI as categories based on WHO standards. Additionally, we adjusted for the following covariates, which you can see here on the slide, of course, included a measure of socioeconomic position along with a number of other maternal characteristics. So after constructing these variables to include in our model, we used multivariable generalized linear regression to estimate risk ratios using a log link function. Furthermore, we estimated robust standard errors with the cluster function in order to account for the fact that in our data set, women could have more than one pregnancy. And so that was our analytic approach and variables of interest. From this analytic approach, we did find that, in fact, black and Hispanic women are at higher risk of inadequate weight gain compared to white women. Here that you can see that blacks have a 29% increased risk of inadequate weight gain compared to whites, and Hispanics similarly have a 28% increased risk. Furthermore, in looking at our interaction results, we did find that this association was modified by pre-pregnancy weight class as defined in the previous conceptual model. So in order to step through our findings for the interaction results, I'm going to use this graphic. So after controlling for the interaction terms for pre-pregnancy weight status, among normal weight women, black and Hispanic women still experience an increased risk of inadequate gestational weight gain. So you can see here, black women experience a 37% increased risk of inadequate gestational weight gain compared to whites, and Hispanic women experience a 34% increased risk of inadequate gestational weight gain compared to whites. And as you can see from the asterisks, both of these findings were significant within the normal weight category. Now, moving on to the overweight category, you can see that there's still an increased risk of inadequate gestational weight gain, but that this increased risk is actually not significant as the confidence intervals cross the null. And extending further to look at interaction effects, when you look at whether this difference in the point estimates for normal weight category is different than the estimates that we see in the overweight category, this interaction was actually not significant. So for black women, that's essentially saying that the 0.13 that we see in the overweight strata, comparing them to their white counterparts, is not different than the 1.37 that we see for black women in the normal weight strata. This finding was similar for Hispanic women, which indicates that actually for normal weight and overweight women, we would want to use, or they both experience the increased risk that we see for the normal weight women. Now, Moving on to our findings for the obese women, you can see that Black and Hispanic women within the obese pre-pregnancy strata actually experience a decreased risk of inadequate weight gain compared to whites. Again, as you can see from the fact that the confidence intervals cross the null, these findings were not significant, so that indicates within obese women, there was no significant difference in risk of inadequate gestational weight gain. Now, when we further look at the interaction terms, we do see that there's a statistically significant interaction that's telling us that the point estimates that we see for these racial differences for the obese women is, in fact, different, statistically different than the point estimates that we see for normal weight women. Again, these findings were similar for Hispanic women. So I focused mostly on the results from looking at inadequate gestational weight gain. However, we did also look at excessive gestational weight gain. And here, as you can see from the tables, we actually did not find any racial differences in excessive gestational weight gain, as you can see from the fact that both point estimates sit almost on the null. And so just to summarize our key findings, because I know it's kind of a lot, normal and overweight Black and Hispanic women have higher risk of inadequate gestational weight gain compared to whites. However, among obese women, there are no racial differences in inadequate gestational weight gain. Furthermore, there are no racial differences in excessive gestational weight gain. So in interpreting these findings, the fact that we do see an increased risk of inadequate gestational weight gain, especially for normal weight and overweight women, suggests that there is a possible role in the associated pregnancy outcomes. So in the beginning of the talk, I kind of framed it as we were interested in gestational weight gain as it pertains to playing a role in the racial differences we see in these pregnancy outcomes. So the fact that we do see racial differences in inadequate gestational weight gain suggests that there might be something there that's driving or contributing to the racial differences we see in the associated pregnancy outcomes. Furthermore, the fact that we see racial differences that we see in inadequate gestational weight gain are more concerned for normal weight and overweight women suggests that this is still a point of concern. So while we are focusing on the increased adverse health outcomes in women beginning pregnancy at an obese weight class, we also want to be aware that these racial differences in inadequate gestational weight gain exist within the normal weight and overweight pre-pregnancy weight classes, and we want to be cognizant of that in kind of addressing healthcare to pregnant women. And finally, the lack of racial differences in excessive gestational weight gain indicates that all women have the same risk of gaining excessively. And as high proportions of women are gaining excessively, this is something that we would want to address across the board. And so finally, we had a few strengths. First, our study was conducted in a large ethnically diverse sample. So not only were we confident that we had sufficient sample sizes within our Black, Hispanic, and white populations, but also we were able to stratify further by pre-pregnancy weight class. We had a longitudinal design from the NLSY, so we were able to follow women over time and have their pregnancies over the duration of the whole study. And finally, the NLSY collected a rich amount of socioeconomic data, and so this was very helpful in our ability to control from confounding from this source. We did have a few limitations. First of all, data on pregnancies were self-reported, and so there is a bias associated with self-report that we weren't fully able to address because regression calibrated methods to address bias associated with self-reported weight gain haven't been extended to pregnant populations as of now. So that was a limitation of our study. Additionally, Hispanic women were included as one heterogeneous group, so we weren't able to pull apart the ethnic variations that we know exist within this group. Finally, there were too few women within the other racial categories to really pull them apart and look at them separately. And so those are the strengths and limitations of our analysis. And finally, I want to conclude with a few next steps that I think this analysis really motivates. First of all, our analysis shows that these racial differences exist, but next steps really need to delve into what are the processes driving these racial differences in gestational weight gain. So I think a good step for future work is looking into social and cultural factors that may be driving these racial differences, also delving deeper into the built environment and the role of the built environment in driving these differences. And finally, taking a life course approach to looking at how early environment really shapes a woman's risk over time and how that can also precipitate these racial differences in gestational weight gain. Additionally, we would want to explicitly determine whether these disparities that we see in gestational weight gain do cause the disparities that we see in adverse pregnancy outcomes. So that suggests taking a picture of the whole process from looking at racial differences and gestational weight gain and pregnancy outcomes in a complete analysis. And finally, because we see excessive gestational weight gain across all racial categories, I think next steps could look at into methods to address excessive weight gain in across the board. So thank you for your time. I'd like to thank Dr. Barbara Abrams, who's in the audience, and Dr. David Rakoff for being wonderful mentors on this project, and also my research group, which has been great in helping me develop and shape this presentation. Thank you.
This approach to determining expected gestational weight, is there some time limit, i.e. week of gestation, that you think the woman needs to reach before you include her in the analysis? Or so, you know, is 24 weeks gestation fine?
Right. I think that we did consider if there's a certain week at which this issue of viability becomes important. In our current analysis, we actually set that at 22 weeks, but we, based on the current literature, we're re-exploring whether that cutoff is reasonable, as a lot of literature has indicated that 24 weeks actually might be a good lower point to this inclusion criteria.
And so gestational age isn't in your mind.
Right, because it's adjusted for in this expected gain adequacy criteria.
Is it possible to look at the range of weight gain through the recommendations of IOM to see what happens with the results if you use a low range and use that as a cut point and then use the high range as a different cut point? Because you're using a single cut point at this point, but there is a range of weight gain that's accepted. I was wondering if there's any way of doing a sensitivity analysis to check out that whole range.
So kind of looking at if a woman, like within the range of adequacy, what's the effect of, what are racial differences possibly if you're gaining kind of like at the low end of this adequacy versus the high end. We currently in this analysis weren't exploring that because we really were concentrating on classifying women basically on the lower end of, like, below the limit and then above this adequacy limit. But I think that would kind of foster interesting results if we're looking at whether these racial differences vary by are you very much close to this edge versus are you over it. So I think that's an important question for our next steps. Yes. Oh, okay. I don't have this unfortunately by race, but as you can see, here's our descriptive status. So you can see that in the majority of women are actually here. Gestational weight gain adequacy are actually gaining excessively. About 23% of women are gaining inadequately, and really only about 30% of women are gaining within the adequacy recommendations from the IOM. So I can leave you with this or more.
Thank you very much.